Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you could have first heard this episode 9 months ago if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that'll get right on your tits.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go, this is it!
This is Top Flight Time Machine, I'm Andy Hotbody Dawson, pow pow pow!
I am Sam Nifty Delaney, so what?
It's the Sir Alf Ramsey Odyssey. Apologies, last week we didn't actually get onto any Sir Alf Ramsey, but what we did instead was probably one of the best episodes we've done ever, I reckon. So fuck it, we'll get back to Sir Alf today, hopefully. Well, let's just plough into it, shall we, and try not to get distracted.
Plough it.
Yeah, pod ploughing.
Plough the pod.
Yeah. We're still into the fucking introduction of the book, and I don't think we're going to get any further than that, to be quite fair, because anything else would be overly ambitious. We're at a bit where it says, amongst the Oxbridge degrees of the sporting, political or diplomatic establishments, Alf felt all too aware of his humble origins and lack of education. Because, yeah, he was mingling with these people who at the FA, they will have all been public school bred people who rose to the top almost effortlessly. And then, of course, he was dealing with political figures, establishment figures, because he was a World Cup winner, do you know what I mean? He was an important person. But inside, he just felt like a little shit, maybe.
Little worm.
Yeah, I felt nothing.
Shit worm.
Yes, I feel like a human form of cancer. But I'm forced to mingle with these people on a daily basis.
I can see the look in their eyes as I speak to them. Oh, they smile, their patronising smiles. But their eyes betray their true thoughts. Look at him, like a tumour. A worm carrying a tumour made of shit.
I know they want to destroy me, but I will not be destroyed by them. Or maybe I will. Maybe my destruction will be self-imposed. Self-destruction. My insecurities.
What a way to go.
Sleepless nights.
The thing is about it is people of that generation, I think, and first of all, it's not like me and you don't have chips on our shoulders. Of course we fucking do.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that generations prior to ours, I do think they had much bigger chips on their shoulders when it came to things like education and class. I really do.
Yeah.
I think I look at my dad and his siblings and I can't get my fucking head around the degree to which, you know, they sort of were falling over themselves to be more, how can I put it, hoity-toity than their roots, to disguise their background.
Yeah.
Which is not something that you or I or lots of people, I guess, in our generation feel the need or certainly the desire to do, right?
Well, I mean, if we did that ill-fitted meeting we had with Julian Fellows, wouldn't have gone as badly as it was. If I'd made more of an effort to, let's say, humanise
myself.
Well,
that's a really good example. It's a good example. Like, we were meeting this man who was, he's one of Britain's poshest men, right? a lovely man, a lovely posh man.
He was lovely.
No doubt, really well educated. And you know, had written the most famous posh person programme possibly of all time.
Yeah.
So, but we didn't fucking for one moment think, you know, it wasn't like you were really thinking, oh, what if he judges me? You're thinking he needs to fucking worry about whether I'm going to judge him, the cunt, right? Now, I used to think, oh, fucking hell, my dad and all his brothers and sisters are so fucking phony and pretentious, blah, blah, blah. But, and they are, but I sort of thought to myself, Yeah, but it must be to do with what you actually felt like you needed to do to survive in those days, because people were so much more fucking brazen. Establishment people were so much more brazen in their disdain for anyone who wasn't from within. You know, because it all started changing in like the 50s, I think, after the war, but it took a long time to change. So our parents who grew up in the fucking 50s, you know, they were still having to like, oh, you will not be taken seriously or liked or fucking get anything nice yourself. And so you're like, oh, fuck, I better hide who I am then. Do you know what I mean? That's how I feel. Because I'm reading this now, I'm thinking, do you think fucking Gareth Southgate, right, who, I don't know what his background is, but I don't think he's from a particular... I know he wasn't fucking... He doesn't have an Oxbridge degree, right? He might not be from the gutter, but I don't think he's from, like, you know, the really fucking well-heeled establishment classes or anything. But I mean, he doesn't really care.
Did he not turn down a university place to become a footballer?
Well, maybe so, but this is like you're talking about Oxbridge degrees, and there's a big difference. Do you know what I mean?
He got eight O levels at grades between A and C, which is all right.
Yeah,
you know,
that's fucking decent. Yeah,
yeah.
I suppose what I'm saying is that I think it was a bigger deal because I not just my old man, like I see it in my in-laws, my mother-in-law, I see it in a lot of people, and I used to find it irritating, but I realise now that for their generation it was a big deal, much bigger deal. I think that society, whatever people say, I'm not saying that the class system isn't still a thing, of course it is, and of course you're held back by, I mean, you know, economics fucking dictates pretty much everything, but I just think that it was a fucking... It sent them mad with anxiety, a lot of these kids who were trying to enter different parts of society but didn't feel that they had the correct background.
I think it's drifting back in that direction, though. I think definitely in the media. And when you look at, like, performers, like actors and bands, a lot of them now seem to be a lot more middle class than they used to be.
That's definitely true. I think that's definitely true. And that, again, is the economy. Everything comes back to socioeconomics. But I think that there's cultural element to class as well, isn't there? Because your social economic background is probably more relevant now than it was like when we started. You know, certainly when I started in the media 20 years ago, you know, I would say it's definitely much harder for people now than it was for me then, right? Mm. But I think culturally, I don't know whether it's as bad as it was back when we're going back to like the 50s, 60s, 70s, because I think that it's rare because it's just not fucking practical or possible for a lot of kids to get a break in an industry like the media unless they're from like a privileged background now. And there's very real practical reasons for that, not least because it's still all fucking based in London, right?
Yeah.
But you're not openly, you might be not openly, but you're not openly sneered at or belittled or condescended to if you so much in if you've got a regional accent or you appear to be from a working class. You might be a little bit, you know, but it's not, I think it was brazen back in those days. I think it was like, well, we're not even fucking interviewing you. Do you know what I mean?
I'm not sure where that's gone away in terms of accents and stuff. I know a lot of people have gone away to university and have gradually lost their accent because it's been put not convenient but almost required, and they know it's required. Do you know what I mean? I mean, my accent isn't as strong as it was when I was younger, and that's partly because I've worked with people who are based in London, and you need to, you know, soften it to be able to be fucking understood. Also, because I used to work in call centres as well. And you can't
be
full on Macam when you're at a call centre.
Directly my accent inquiries. Changes depending on what room I'm in.
What's that? Is that Chinese takeaway or something? Where? Eh? Can you spell it? How do you spell it?
What, American Embassy, is it? No. What you want that for? About that 9/11 crap?
Look, listen, Pet, it's down. They're both down now. There's no point ringing the embassy. If you know anyone that was in there, they're fucked. Right,
so don't waste your money on a phone call.
So, my
accent is comedian like. I think I've told you before that my wife knows who I'm on the phone to, even from quite a long distance, depending on like how London voice. My accent sounds, you know. And for instance, anyone, I forgot to talk about this on the show, but I did make a recent appearance on Radio 4 on Front Row again, mate, which, as you know, is like, for me, the ultimate.
Yeah, you'll drop everything for that, won't you? Yeah,
they asked me to go on to, I reviewed that thing about the care home with Stephen Graham in it.
Oh, yeah.
They asked me to do that, and I was like, oh, yes, it really is a masterpiece. You know, that's my rate.
Was there a fee?
Yeah, there's a fee.
Oh, there's a fee. That's good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would do it.
You wouldn't have asked.
No. But I know with the BBC that you just get a fee. That is not for a guest appearance on the BBC, you just get some random amount of money paid into your account and they sort it all out. You don't have to invoice. But
do you need my account details? No, we have them. We're the BBC.
We have everything. We're outside your home now watching you to make sure that you're not naked while you broadcast down the line. But I know I would have done it for free because obviously, you know, that's what I aspire to be a radio for. Hello and welcome to Front Row with me, Sam Delaney. But I remember once Cass Pennant called me on a Sunday when I was at my mum's having lunch and I said, I've just got to take this call. And I went into the next room and I was speaking loudly, as I do. And my brother said, who the fuck's he on the phone to? And my wife said, without even looking up from a mail, oh, it'll be Cass Pennant. And they went, how do you know that? And he said, because I can tell, because he's gone like about 10 times more Cockney than he is in normal life. But you know, you don't notice you're doing it. I don't, anyway.
So, where were we? Was that anything to do with anything? I don't know. We'll get sidetracked again.
Yeah, Alf Ramsey. It's very much to do with Alf Ramsey, because I think it's interesting, a man like him being... I suppose what it is I'm reading it, I'm thinking, what's his problem? He's won the fucking World Cup. Why does he give a fuck?
Yeah.
These people are just fucking nobodies who've got them born with a silver spoon in their mouth.
Yeah.
And that, to me, seems strange. To me, it seems strange that he gave so much of a fuck. But I realised that things were different then.
And it
felt like a much bigger deal.
And obviously, he's obviously got this deep-rooted insecurity that's always been there.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? It's not just, it didn't just happen when he became the World Cup winner. It's something that's been with him all his life, I think.
Yeah, because, and it becomes more pronounced when he's put in a room with these fancy people.
Yeah, if you haven't got that insecurity, you just gradually assimilate yourself in whichever area you move into, you know, and you feel comfortable with it. That's how I feel anyway. That's how I felt with Julian Fellowes. I thought, well, I've met, you know, I've
you said, you were like, I've met Maharajas, princes, I've met them all, mate.
Yeah.
Sultans, I've met them all, so I'm not going to shit myself when I'm in a room with fucking Mr. Downton Abbey.
Which I've never even watched, probably wouldn't even like.
I've never even watched, you sure?
Yeah.
I've heard it's shite.
I'm working class, you see. It's not for me. You know, if you're written over Venus,
I like Bullseye, mainly. And my soaps. So is Bingo a telly programme? Or is that theatre? Yeah, well, I like Bingo as well.
Born into a poor rural Essex family, Alf left school at 14 and took his first job as a delivery boy for the Dagenham Co-op. So, I mean, there you go. Do you know what I mean? It says he devised a number of strategies. One was to erect a social barrier against the world. I will erect a social barrier against the world.
Against the entire world.
It says he erected a social barrier against the world, avoiding all forms of intimacy, even with Mrs. Probably. Ramsey. We used to make love through a muslin sheet.
No exchange, no potential contamination or exchange of microscopic bacterium.
Avoided all forms of intimacy. This is why he could appear so aloof, even downright rude. From his earliest days as a professional, he was reluctant to open up to anyone. So there you are, it was there all the way through his life. He's fucked in the head, basically.
I'm bonkers in the nut, and I don't care who knows it. It's society that's made me this way.
I'm unpredictable, so stay a close distance away. I could crack at any time.
I invented social distancing long before this COVID bullshit. 2 metres apart. That's the Ramsay rule. I even said it to the Queen, but she gave me my fucking knighthood. 2 metres apart, ma'am, or suffer the consequences.
2 metres apart and a muslin cloth around the head.
I said, you take one step nearer and I'll take that sword off of you and ram it up your ass.
You've been warned.
Our courtiers didn't take kindly to that. But then they had won the World Cup and I had.
That's why I'm here, you cunts. Yeah, it says, this is why he could often appear aloof, even downright rude. From his earliest years as a professional, he was reluctant to talk to anyone. This distance might have been invaluable in retaining his authority as a manager, but it also prohibited the formation of close friendships. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's sad, isn't it?
I have no friends. Close friendships, which is very sad for me. Sometimes I would like to have someone who I could play games with, chat to, share intimacies, but no, it was never to be.
I toyed with the idea of getting a parakeet, but I found the bright colours unpredictable.
In the end, I painted a face onto a football. The football that Jeff Haas scored his legendary goal that never was with. I called him Spencer, and we became close friends. I told him many things about myself. One night we kissed, but we never spoke of that again.
I placed him on a plinth on a shelf at head height. We would have many long conversations where I would remain standing the whole time.
One night, Lady Ramsay came in to the garage where I kept him on his plinth and found us dancing to the song Lady in Red.
I would always have a conversation with him standing up. I find it impossible to have a relaxed conversation while seated. I need to be on the move at all times in case I need to escape.
A gentleman never speaks to someone while sat. That is slovenly. It's the Greek way. If you go to Greek, or Spain for that matter, all of them are sat about. Like slobs, discussing matters of the day, playing dominoes, drinking their alcohol and so forth. Not an English gentleman. On his feet, upright, with a straight back at all times.
Pacing around the room. Backwards, forwards, sideways.
And on occasion, where it calls for it, diagonally.
Sometimes hopping from foot to foot. But always on the move.
Always in motion. A-I-M.
Jalapeño.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jalapeño.
Pat Goodbold, his secretary throughout his spell as Ipswich manager from 55 to 63, says, I was 20 when Alf came here. My first impression was he was a shy man. I think that right up to his death, he was a very shy man. You could not get to know him. I'm very shy. Don't look at me. Stop it. You're making me giggle. Stop it now. I think that right up to his death, he was a very shy man. You could not get to know him. He was a good man to work for, but I can honestly say that I never got to know him. Pat Godbold, you never got to know me. I say that for nothing.
So I've got you'd have liked to get to know me. Yes. She was always giving me the eye. It was disgusting.
Yes.
But no.
She would come in wearing low-cut dresses. I knew what she was after. And she would have got it as well.
A siren.
She would have got it as well if I didn't have Spencer to confide in back in the garage.
Spencer, there is a siren at my workplace trying to tempt me siren. With her painted face and low-cut dresses. What should I do? His silence spoke volumes.
We kissed.
Once again, Spencer, your silence speaks volumes. You are so wise.
Spencer and I kissed.
I don't know what I should do without you in my life.
What else?
You know that's... how he's shy? You know, I've been watching the Sopranos recently, and a character who I'd forgotten how much I loved is the character of Bobby Bacala, who starts off as the sort of assistant to Junior, and then later in the show ends up marrying Janice.
Yes.
And he's brilliant. He's the one who now does a podcast with Christopher about the podcast.
They're making it into a book as well. I think they've just transcribed the podcast. That's an idea, transcribing podcasts.
Sounds
book out.
Nice. We've got to log into one of them transcription things now as well.
Yeah.
Just get fucking results bot to do it. There you go. There's a few typos, but people won't mind that.
Transcription complete. 4,000 million words.
There you go. Publish that, you cunt. Now,
shall I send 4 million to Hodder and Staunton?
But there are no paragraph breaks. No, sorry, that would cost you extra. We'd have to get someone in to do the paragraph breaks. But there's a great bit in it recently where he takes Junior to the doctors and they're talking about his cancer.
Mm.
And Junior's, like, asking questions. When they leave, he goes mental. He's always telling Bobby Bacalar off because he's a sort of a timid presence. And he tells him off because he goes, fuck's sake, it says for you to bring another adult with you to ask questions because you might be too stressed to ask questions for straight. You didn't say a fucking word the whole time we were in there. And Bobby Bacalar, who's this enormous, I mean, he's like twice as big as Tony Soprano, isn't he?
Yeah.
He just goes to him, he shrugs and he goes, Junior, shyness is a curse. It's one of my favourite lines in The Sopranos because it's just so funny that there's this fucking New Jersey mafioso enforcer who comes out of a line like, shyness is a curse.
Love it. I went to see Many Saints of Newark yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Underwhelming.
Disappointed.
Disappointing.
Underwhelming.
Disappointing.
Yeah, I've had that vibe from the things I've read. There's not been much talk about it or publicity, and I that raised my suspicions. So I thought, what you're talking about here is the most popular television program of all time.
Yeah.
And after however many years it's been away for, it's now a prequel movie. This is the sort of shit in the Star Wars universe people fucking lose their fucking shit over it.
Yeah.
And it's been very low key. And I started to think there must be a reason for that. It must be that it's not very good, and the studio are kind of trying to.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are like kind of going to see it and then just not talking about it.
Because
they don't want to be. But it was like, it hasn't got any of the humour or the heart. Like that line you mentioned there hasn't got any. There's a few funny bits, but there's not a lot of humour. There's none of the heart. And there's The Sopranos has got loads of brilliant women characters in it, hasn't it?
Yes.
And there's none of that in this other than Livia, an early version of Livia, which is a pretty good impersonation of the later version of her.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of men being cunts for about 2 hours.
Mm.
And it's just...
That's my problem. As I've got older, that's why I've gone off Scorsese, because I think I loved it when I was a younger bloke, because the films are quite adolescent in a way.
Yeah.
I know people try to elevate them, and they'll be... The vast majority of people listen to this will go, oh, Scorsese's a genius. But ultimately, if you watch The Irishman, all of the female figures in these fucking things are two-dimensional, whimpering sideshow acts, right?
Yeah.
And it's not like I'm making a stand for feminism here. It's just that if you're a really good storyteller, you're capable of doing more than getting a sort of adolescent hard-on over tough guys in fancy suits.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is what a lot of Scorsese and not least fucking Tarantino's the worst. It's like nerds who are impressed by tough guys and have this quite two-dimensional idea of these tough guys. And what was good about Sopranos is David Chase is like, well, let's examine these people as fucking three-dimensional human beings rather than comic book characters, you know.
Right. We've got a situation here, right? I've got a wireless printer in this room. And my son, who was off school today, has printed something off, and he said he was going to do this at some point while I'm doing a podcast. He's printed something off. The idea is that I go over and look at it now, see what he sent me. So brilliant. I'll do that. I'll go over.
This is brilliant. That is so good.
I'll show you it there. It's a blobfish.
And he's put, blobfish.
Ask Sam what his favourite cheese is.
Oh, cheddar.
Cheddar, house cheese.
Good mature cheddar, Malakintyre cheddar, not any cheddar.
So there.
Malakintyre cheddar, which unfortunately has been discontinued unless you're willing to buy it in massive bulk.
It's retired from public life, the cunt.
Yeah, and do you know what my second favourite cheese is? Parmesan. Yeah. And what did I find out recently?
Full of
the
meat.
The cunt's got meat in it. So you're looking at a bloke whose two favourite cheeses in the world are no longer available to him.
Fucked over by your favourite cheeses.
I'm on fucking... I'm on third tier cheese here, mate.
So yeah, the little bastard's fucking done that. He's done what he said he was going to do. He's wirelessly sent a document from elsewhere in the house.
It feels so good because it sort of feels simultaneously quite modern but really old fashioned too.
Yeah.
He's basically sending you a house fax, an internal fax.
Yeah. I'm going to pretend I'm not impressed by it, the bastard. But yeah, well done. Well done, DJ Beans.
Winding you up, we just briefly, we've now released the Bear 10, which is Len's Leniverse podcast, out into the... It was just on Substack, now it's everywhere. But fuck me, he's warmed to it and he's now just... He now sees it as a vehicle to publicly criticise and humiliate me. And let's just say, get a lot off his chest. So it feels like it's becoming more about that than the Leniverse.
You admit that you use these podcasts as almost a form of therapy. And now Len's doing the same with his. But against you.
But his is more mad. I always say I've sort of used you as a free therapist. In fact, not even free, because we get paid for it, so it's reverse, right? But
it pays for your actual
therapy.
But
this is different. This is mad. This is aversion therapy. This is like sit down with your dad and tell him everything that you don't like about him. And he only refers to me throughout the whole thing as Boring John.
Oh, fuck you.
Will not acknowledge any other fucking name for me.
Oh, man. Gotta listen to them.
And he's told me he wants to do T-shirts with Boring John on them as well.
Well, you can't agree to make that, money. You've got image himself. Rights. You've got image rights.
Yeah, but he reckons because he made up the name.
Oh, 50-50 then, maybe.
I don't officially go by the name Boring John, do I? I actually don't acknowledge it, but...
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, you're losing all
it's a grey area. Legally, it's a grey area, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, just while we're talking about that blobfish thing, one of the... one of the things that I recommended on Turbo Telly, which is the TV roundup for IFS Turbo subscribers. I'll give that a little glimpse because it's Wednesday night. So that's tonight, BBC Four. And it's a thing called The Blob, A Genius Without a Brain. And I don't know what it is, but here's the blurb about it, right? 50 minutes long. Documentary about leading scientists' investigations into the properties of a 1-billion-year-old single-cell organism that might challenge our concept of intelligent life. I don't know what that means, but I'm watching it.
Yeah, that's getting watched.
Blob.
That's better than Downton Abbey, surely.
Yeah, genius blob. 10 p.m. BBC Four, and obviously iPlayer subscription.
Currently being used to select the chart date for obscure music podcast Top Flight Tune Machine.
I think it's its cousin, so many cents in Newark, I'm sorry, but
that's a shame, but I'm going to see it anyway, mate.
Yeah, you should see it.
And I'm fascinated to see Gandolfini's son playing Tony. I think that's interesting.
I was, but the cunt looks like John Cusack, so I can't get past that. He looks
I know what you mean, actually. Yeah, he does.
Because, like, I'm trying to look at his face.
He's got sad eyes.
Yeah, I'm looking for, like, glimpses of Gandolfini and his expressions and stuff. And all I see is John Cusack. So that was fucking fruitless as well.
They both have sad eyes. Beautiful but sad eyes. Yeah. Cusack and the Gandolfini family. Yeah,
exactly.
Have I ever told, and I don't know whether... I'm definitely not going to do it now, I promise you that, because it's a long story, but it's up there in the best I've ever heard. The Paul Dunan and James Gandolfini story on this podcast.
You have told it to me, yes.
Oh, good. Thank God. I've told it to you, but not on the podcast.
I can't remember you told it on the back pocket.
Huh?
I don't think you have.
We'll get in touch if you're listening and that rings a bell and you're a long time listener. Let me know, because I don't want to rehash it. If I haven't told it, that means I should probably call Dunan and ask for permission. Although we might have to get him on. I might pre-record him telling me it on voice notes because his version is very good.
Yeah, I thought that you hadn't told it because Dunan was going to put it in his podcast. I think that's why you didn't tell
it. Yeah, he probably has by now, though. His podcast's been going ages. But if you don't know, the hub of all of this is that Paul Dunan and James Gandolfini were really good mates. And I know that sounds mad. That sounds like something made up in Viz, but it's really true. Yeah. And that's the starting point of the story. And what's funny is that when I was working at TalkSport one night and the news broke that James Gandolfini had died, producers were running around going, who can we get on the line to do a tribute to James Gandolfini? Who on earth could we have the number of who knew James Gandolfini? And I've casually gone, Paul Dunan was mates with him. And everyone's gone, fuck off. But they got him on the line, sure enough.
And he didn't tell the story, did he?
He didn't tell the story, but we will tell the story. I'll line that up. Maybe for Turbo Cunters only, because it's such a good story. I'll just get a voicemail. Blimey. I'll get a voice note and put it out as Turbo content.
Well, tell it on this Friday's video live stream.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I'll get Paul on the phone and I'll film it, and we'll film it while he talks to me on speakerphone.
Yeah. Yeah,
do that. I'll just do a Zoom call with him.
One of them. Yeah. Do that. Where are we at? Yeah, we run out of time. Basically, I'm not going to get
fair
back
enough. Well,
we've
got quite a lot of Alf done.
I'm not going to get back at this off now when we're at 30 minutes. But he was a shy man. That's what we've learned.
And shyness is a curse. New idea for a T-shirt? Well, our Redbubble store is now up and running again. You can find the address via our website, tftimemachine.com, or just go on Redbubble and search for us.
If you want to buy a shyness is a curse T-shirt, no. Just get the Nervous Lovemaker one. That's all you need.
I haven't redone those yet, but I will do those. Not all the old stock is yet, but there are some new T-shirts and things available on there now.
Well, hurry up then, because it's nearly Christmas.
I don't know. They're all on there, and I'll be doing some major promo for it tonight.
All right. Okay, that's it. Thanks, everybody, for us listening to us fucking wittering on for half an hour. back again more so off next week, probably. Ta-ra!
Thanks a lot, lesbians.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.